It's another 2-for-1 Radio Cheddar podcast today. First up, it's Eric and Dean from Stone Temple Pilots as they celebrate the 25th anniversary of their debut record, Core. We talk about the writing process for that album, some of their favorite songs on it, even their new direction they're taking now. Yeah, then it's Donnie Blair from the Toadies. He's got this book out called Even If It Kills Me, Martial Arts, Rock and Roll, and Mortality. We talk about that and a ton more today on Radio Chatter.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 4, 3, 2, 1, and liftoff.
This is Radio Chatter with WRIF's own Meltdown.
Thank you so much for checking out the Radio Chatter podcast. Meltdown back at it right here in Detroit on WRIF. If you're outside the Detroit area, thank you so much for checking it out. Of course, man, this year on the podcast, I've had some heavy hitter guests. James Hetfield, Kid Rock, Corey Taylor, Dave Mustaine. Just yesterday, the guys from Pop Evil, Hailstorm, Jason Hook from Five Finger Death Punch. I've got Tyler from Theory of a Dead Man coming up before the end of the week. So definitely subscribe. I've been talking to some other artists as well to get them on in a future episode, but I've just been so backed up with interviews that I haven't been able to squeeze them in. But today we take care of two with one fell swoop, and second up is going to be Donnie Blair. He's the bass player for the band The Toadies. He joined the band in 2009, and he's got this book out called Even If It Kills Me, Martial Arts, Rock and Roll, and Mortality. And it's a pretty inspiring, uplifting book, and I've never met or interviewed Donnie before, but a really nice guy and a really good listen. So hopefully you'll stick around and check that out. But first, it's the guys from Stone Temple Pilots, Eric Kretz and Dean DeLeo. And we talk about the 25th anniversary of Core. I was there at the very beginning when I was growing up in Buffalo. I was on the radio out there for 5 or 6 years. And it was almost 25 years ago to the day I had a chance to interview Scott Weiland for the first time, because the record had just come out. We were only playing Sex Type Thing. That's the only song I knew from these guys. And I don't even know if I even had a full copy in my hand. I just had like a couple singles or what have you. But yeah, Sex Type Thing was out. And I remember interviewing Scott earlier in the day. And then after I got off the air, I went to the venue to watch the show, which we talk about coming up here in the interview. I also asked him about the new singer. You'll see what happens as I ask about that. This rumor keeps circulating around that it's somebody from Detroit. And I don't want to spread rumors, so I'm not even going to name any names or anything like that. But this rumor actually came out last year, and I'm hearing from some reliable sources that it's true. But it all remains to be seen, and we'll see what happens in the future as far as the lead singer and new music from the guys from Stone Temple Pilots. In the meantime, I was connected with Eric and Dean. It's STP today on Radio Chatter.
All right, good morning.
All right, there we are. Hey, it's Meltdown here in Detroit at WRIF. How's things shaking out for you guys so far today?
Pretty good.
I see. Well, first of all, I wanted
Mr. Melt. How did you get the name Meltdown? when you're on the birth certificate, when they're like, do Meltdown here.
You know, that's a name I got given to me in Buffalo, and that's where I saw you guys for the first time almost exactly 25 years ago.
Oh, you're at that show. At the scrapyard.
The scrapyard. We were just talking about that. Yeah. So
you were one of the 8 people there that night.
Last time I talked to you, you said 30, but now we're getting less and less. But yeah, I was one of the few people there, and I couldn't believe it when I saw it. And I thought, man, that band's pretty good. And then you guys jumped off the stage, went right to the bar.
Imagine that.
So anyways, now we're celebrating the 25th anniversary, and I'm not sure how many guys you're actually talking to that played Sex Type Thing when it first came out.
Yeah, that's a good opening track for this album.
Yeah, no question. What a great record that is. So what kind of questions have people been asking you? I know that I'm kind of late on the boat here as far as the interviews go, but what are people asking you about the record?
You know, just kind of, a lot of questions like, you know, what was that time like for you guys? You know, let's face it, it's 25 years ago. You know, we were firing on all cylinders, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's one of those things when I listen back to the record, I know you guys were like working at like guitar stores and different things like that, right? And I think one of the songs you guys were kind of, I think maybe even Dead and Bloated came up kind of like in a Mexican restaurant or something. And then, of course, you know, you guys start to get some success and whatnot. And I imagine that writing songs for the next few records had to be much different than writing for the debut album.
It was kind of the same. You know, we don't follow any one way. brought in, you know, as a complete song, and some are written parts from each guy in the band, you know, and we just blend all parts together. There's really no rhyme or reason to it. It's just whatever we feel, you know, gives us the best song, the best arrangement.
Mm-hmm. But were you writing songs in cars for the second and third and fourth album?
What do you think, Eric? I mean, a lot of stuff was written on the road. You know, you're out on the road, and you know, in the back of a tour bus or your hotel room, or you know, I've said this a few times in the past. You know what? Excuse me. But on the Purple record, there's a couple songs I wrote when I was like 16, 17 years old. Mm. You know, and you know, Where the River Goes was kind of like a riff I had, you know, as Eric put it earlier, in high school.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're bringing all that with us, you know. You know, Eric Shirley was honing his talents throughout his high school years, and that all kind of, we brought it all with us, man. We brought it all with us. We hooked it all up. We hooked the team up, and we put on the yokes, and we hooked it to the wagon, and we just brought it all with us, man.
Now, you've probably been asked this a bunch of times. I'm going to ask it anyways. What's your favorite song off the record? For me, Cracker Man's always kind of been one of my favorites.
I think for me, this is Eric. When we tracked Creep, it was really special because it was all basically live in the room. You know, there's a few overdubs in there, and it was we made the album really quick in just over 2 weeks. And we went out to, Brendan took us out to dinner. I remember at the Cheesecake Factory, mm-hmm. fine eating, and kind of came back, lit a bunch of candles in the room, all kind of in a big circle there. And I think it was Creep. It was like first or second take.
We only did two takes of it, yeah. Mm-hmm. Might have been the second take, I think, we used for the album.
Really, and just it kind of captured what we were doing in the studio is exactly what it sounds like on the disc, of course, but that's basically what we sounded like in the room, and it just really brings back some really great memories.
That was a great night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I read that it was like one take or two takes or something like that, but was that kind of commonplace? Did you guys have these songs pretty much pounded out before you went in the studio?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They were some great terminology. They were pounded out. You know, you got to think, you know, a rehearsal room was about $100 a day, and these were the days where a recording studio was about $1,500 a day. Hmm. So, you know, we had enough sense, you know, to you know, be efficient, shall we say.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool to look back on this, you know, 25 years ago when you guys were just young guys, you know, in your early 20s and stuff, writing some of these songs that have become legendary and iconic.
Yeah, especially when you think about the lyrical content of what Scott was coming up with. Really fantastic, and for someone 22, 23 years old, extremely mature and delving into his own mind of what he could perceive in the future, what he understood, you know, how his interpretations of everything was.
Yeah.
To work with, you know, to talk about Scott for a minute, I mean, what a talent he was. We recently, with Brendan O'Brien, the producer, we pulled up some of the multi-tracks and we're kind of discussing, you know, some of the different stuff on there, and especially hearing Scott's vocals, that sound in his voice. You know, not only was he technically great and his characters were so developed, but the sound in his voice was just unbelievable. And so, and such a treat to hear soloed out and to know that that's part of why this record is so special.
Yeah, it's a great album for sure. Speaking of singers, I know you guys have kind of drifted away from this, but would the new singer in the band you guys working with, would he happen to become from a town that rhymes with Detroit?
I don't know about that, but just so you know, we searched the whole world for a singer.
Right.
Oh yeah, we went worldwide. But are you up for an exclusive?
Sure, I am. Yes.
Okay. Well, I want you to feel special about this because we love Detroit. I'm thrilled about your Lions. I'm thrilled about the renewal of the head coach's contract, and we want to share something with you.
All right.
Ha 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 ha!
like our new direction.
All right. I guess you've been asked this question a few times then.
A few times, but I love that. I love our new direction.
That might be the finest piece I've written yet.
All right. Hey, just a couple more things, sir. I know my time is running short. Just your thoughts on Tom Petty, of course, with his recent passing. Did he have an influence on you guys growing up?
I think he had an influence on, not only us, but the whole world. I mean, what a fantastic talent, songwriter.
You said it best yesterday, man, when we were kind of pulling up some stuff of Damn the Torpedoes. You know, that was popular music in the 1970s. Were we spoiled? Like, that was popular music. You could turn on the radio and hear, that's what you heard.
Yeah.
Unlike now, you know, now it's just so... I can't really use those words.
Yeah, it's a lot different now. But you know what I mean. That used to be pop radio. That was crossed over to a ton of stations, and
it was all the music that was, you know, being written and recorded back then. So yeah, you know, sadly, we all are one day gonna succumb to that. But Tom was awful young, man, and it was just awful news on top of the already awful news, you know, which what transpired in Las Vegas. Just it was a crazy day yesterday, man. Just a real crazy day. Just a sad day. We got together at the studio to work. We didn't get much work done. Yeah. It was just a lot of day of reflection and just kind of getting your head out of the sand, you know?
Yeah, it was a tough day on the radio for sure as well. So, well, listen, guys, I appreciate the time. Congratulations on the 25th anniversary here of the debut record, Core. And maybe we'll see you next time here in Detroit with some new music, a new singer, new tour and everything, huh?
We love it.
Yes.
All right, guys.
We love you, Detroit.
There they are, Eric and Dean from Stone Temple Pilots here in the Radio Chatter podcast. And just chalk up another band I got to text my vinyl dealer about. It's like crack. I have to get all this stuff on vinyl now. And add that to the list of Tom Petty and Paul McCartney, who I just saw the other day, and more Beatles albums. And oh, man. Anyways, yeah, the 25th anniversary of Core, definitely a solid record. All the STP records were so good. And for me, I don't know, it's kind of weird. I never really lumped them in with the grunge bands, even though I guess that's exactly what they are. But they hailed from Southern California, where the other bands were from, you know, the northwestern part of the country. I don't know. It's just always kind of a weird thing with me. But it's when I think of grunge bands, I think, you know, the Big Four, you know, the Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Soundgarden, and, you know, Alice in Chains as well. So in the meantime, let's switch gears. Donnie Blair for the Toadies. This new book, Even If It Kills Me, Martial Arts, Rock and Roll, and Mortality. He joined the band in 2009. Really nice guy. Hope you guys dig this conversation with Donnie today on Radio Chatter.
I'm doing good so far. The day kind of just started out here. So
well,
figuring it out.
I'll tell you, I got to be honest, dude. You got some pretty big shoes to fill because the last bass player I talked to was Lexi Fox from Steel Panther. So, you know.
Well, you know, you're right. I do have the big ones and big hair to fill. It's going to be hard since I'm bald.
That's right. So have you seen those guys play before?
I have. They're awesome. Yeah. All of them are just, you know, really, really, really good musicians. Every one of them are fantastic. So it's fun to see that they parlayed that into something that works for them.
Yeah, I don't know if they get enough credit for their musicianship, but you are right. They're a great band to see live.
They get it. You know what? I think it's one of those, it's people that don't know. And that's the thing I think of a great musician, you know, mm-hmm. You don't have to overshow it. Those guys give people a great show.
Right.
And that the people that don't know are just seeing a great show. But to us that do know, we know how good they are.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to show it.
I grew up in that era, probably just like you did. And it's like, it's one of those things where it's like you either get it or you don't. I get it. I love it. I think it's fantastic. But
oh, yeah. They're really good. We saw them, I believe it was the singer or some of those guys were in Atomic Punks.
Right.
Like 20 years ago, whenever I first came to L.A., my brother and I had an older band, a punk band called Hagfish, and we went out, made sure we went and saw those guys, and it blew our mind.
So is that kind of where you started, was in the punk scene in Los Angeles?
No, we started in Dallas, Fort Worth. My brother, actually we're from Sherman. And so we had a punk band in Texas, of all things, you know, why? We don't know. We just did it. And that got signed to London Records, and that's kind of how I got my start, and just traveling around the world with that. And, you know, Toadies were going around the same time as well, but they were our friends.
Right.
You know? And I was a humongous fan of them constantly. Would buy, you know, the records as soon as they came out. And then when I found out about they needed a bass player, I jumped. I jumped for it.
Now, that was in, you joined the band in 2009, correct?
2008.
All right. So you joined the band in 2008, but I was wondering if it was one of those things where you guys had crossed paths a lot of times, because that seems to be like sometimes when bands are looking for guys, they seem to gravitate towards guys they kind of know or they've, you know, run across or toured with in the past.
Oh, yeah, fully. They had, my brother used to be in the Burden Brothers with Vaden, our singer. It was the group he had while the Toadies were broken up. So there was already that connection. I've known Clark since probably 93. His older band, Funland, gave Hagfish their start, putting us on their bills. And I also known Rez, our drummer, for a number of years from a band that he had played with, 1100 Springs. So it was very incestuous, pretty much. And I've also known the management for 20-something years, so... It kind of made sense. You know?
Yeah, I was going to say it made sense for sure. You guys are coming to town, by the way, St. Andrews Hall on October 13th to play. Yeah. But I wanted to talk about your book, Even If It Kills Me, Martial Art, Rock and Roll, and Mortality. And it's like, okay, first of all, why write a book? I mean, just give me the whole details on what this whole how this whole thing came about.
All right. Well, when I was a kid, my brother and I, you know, I wanted to be a ninja. You know, that's what we wanted to do.
Who didn't?
The ninja. Yeah, exactly. So we were like, easiest way to be a ninja, start Taekwondo. Let's do it. And we got pretty good at it. But then after a while, we just got into guitars and playing and music, and it kind of just went by the wayside. And I was always, you know, kind of bummed out with myself. I never concluded that. I never finished it. You know, I got OCD, so I have to finish things. Sucks.
So therefore, you get back into martial arts as an adult. Is that what happens?
Yeah, and the band had a couple of, had a year off, so I said, well, I'm going to go for it. I was about almost turning 41, and I thought, here's my chance. I'm going to start this. And a couple of years later, I got it, and I couldn't believe it, you know, and it just started me down the path of continuing with martial arts. And I just thought at that point, I need to journal this. I'm never going to get another chance. We'll never know what happens. Hey, we'll see. So I just took a lot of the journals and my thoughts and turned it into the manuscript, and YMAA liked it enough and they liked the idea. And we were able to turn it into a book. You know, it's been pretty uplifting, scary as hell. As well, you know, that because I know people are going to read it. So
yeah.
Whenever they buy it, I'm like, oh, God, they're going to read it now.
Now, one of the first things I thought of when I heard your story about this was the guy that said he could become a pro golfer if he just played for 10,000 hours. You know, it's like that's kind of the thing that I thought of right away is because, you know, you're saying, well, I'm going to get back into this and I'm going to get right back at it.
Yeah, it was one of those. I kind of had the same idea. I was under no illusions that I was going to blow through it. Like, this is going to take a lot of hard work, dedication, you know, and support from my wife, and me going to get belittled and have my butt handed to me by 14-year-old kids cracking me in the ribs and, you know, and that. And it happened.
I was just about to ask you if that's what happened. Okay, so go ahead.
Yeah, it did. There was a kid that almost broke my leg with a kick. He was probably 16. Just a monster, you know. He didn't know. He didn't know his own strengths. And he delivered one into my left side that almost crippled me for about 3 weeks. It was insane and intense. And, I mean, I'm doing jiu-jitsu now, and I haven't been hurt that bad. Like, oh my God.
So do you watch some of the fights and stuff like the MMA and different things like that?
I do now. I started watching Glory fights, and Nikki Holsken was a favorite. Now I'm watching a lot of the MMA, but now that I'm into jiu-jitsu, they've turned away from jiu-jitsu and they're doing more stand-up striking. So I can't pick it. I'm always behind the curve, man.
Yeah. Now, it always reminds me as a kid, remember the Gracies?
Those
guys could walk into a bar and no one would be scared of them or look at them twice, and they could cripple anyone in the bar.
That's how it is. Yeah. It's pretty much that way. It's really good the older you get, and that's what I loved about getting my black belt in Taekwondo. Is it prepared me to go, well, I did that. I can continue on and do this. Maybe not in Taekwondo, although there are some of the guys my age and older that do it fantastic, and they're great, but it's very hard on your body the older you get. And I wanted to continue in martial arts.
Yeah, I think I read something about that where, I'm 48, and it's like one of those things where it's like, yeah, you get hurt, and it takes a long time to heal, so...
It really does. And this that we're doing now, it's kind of, I've met so many people older than me that started when they were 48 and 50, and they're almost black belts now. Anthony Bourdain, he's 62, I believe,
right,
and a blue belt. Mm. He didn't start, I don't think, until 55, and he looks fantastic shape.
Yeah, he is in good shape.
Those are the kind of things. Yeah, it's kind of like the good inspiration thing for me to like, oh, well, okay, maybe I can keep on this journey. I hate to use that word because I'm not really a Journey fan. They're a good band, but I just don't really like.
Yeah, born and raised in South Detroit. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that in here in the Motor City. But maybe you guys should cover that song when you come here on October 13th.
Ooh, don't, nice one. You know what? We should.
Yeah, don't stay. just play the first verse and you'll be done. You'll be good. But so you got the martial arts covered. Then you got the rock and roll and mortality part. Where does that all come in?
Oh, God. Just seeing every day that feeling you're not good enough and just feeling that it's kind of a way, I think, I was getting older every day, and it was getting proven to me every day that I'm old, and my body is failing and I'm trying to keep from it. So it's kind of like a race against time. When you're young, you don't think about it. But at this age, I think I talk about it like I can't. I can't afford plugs. I'm bald and I'm poor. So I can't afford a sports car to make me look better. So the only thing I can kind of do is go do this and get my ass kicked every day by kids to prove I'm worth it, to try to, slow down the advance of age.
But yeah, but dude, you're in a rock and roll band touring the country. I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Oh, you know what? You're right. But a lot of that is I just kind of, people aren't looking at me. I'm a bass player.
Right.
It's not a shot on bass players. No one looks at the bass player. If they do, there's something wrong with them. They're like me. They're the guy that looks at the bass player to see what gauge strings they're using.
Now, unlike Lexi Fox, you probably use more than just the top big chord, right?
No, I'm very much like Lexi.
Just the top one. Yeah. All right, there you go. That's what he was talking about.
I love Cliff Williams. Yeah, I mean, you keep it simple. That's how our band is. We keep it simple, stupid,
Right.
I wish it was Billy Sheehan, but I'm not.
Yeah, I grew up in Buffalo and had a chance to see him and all his stuff. So, yeah, I've very familiar with Billy. So.
Good call. Okay, good call.
Yeah, Billy's great.
Actually, TG, my fellow writer in the book, is from Buffalo also.
Oh, really?
TG Lofredo. He's from a Brenner, born and raised, and now he's in Vegas because he got tired of the winners. He's like, I'm done. I want heat.
Yeah, there's no winners in Vegas. That. Right, exactly. Hey, but you know what? Are you guys playing one of your new tracks, Polly Jean, off the new record when you guys go out on tour?
You know what? We are.
Okay, well, there you go. There's your chance to be in the spotlight.
Boom.
See?
Yeah, thank you. We love that song. We're playing a lot of the record on this run, actually. We don't like it when bands come out and like supporting a new album and they just do maybe three songs from it. And then they get back to the stuff people know. Like, well, no, we believe in this thing. We're going to try and play as much as you can stomach, without killing us.
Yeah, The Lower Side of Uptown is the new record that just came out a couple weeks back. And you guys are out in tour and supporting this this new record. And you're crisscrossing the country. Who's going to be opening up with you guys?
Local H.
Okay, I wasn't sure I seen it on your Twitter and stuff. I wasn't sure if they were going to be going on with you for the next several weeks or whatever.
Oh, yeah, they're on the entire thing. They're opening it up, and they are just lighting people aflame every night and just priming them for whenever we go on. You know, it's just like, wow. They're a great band. They're a great live band, and it's amazing to hear all of that sound come out of two guys, you know?
Yeah, and that kind of two-man band type of thing are really, I mean, there's all sorts of bands out there now like that, you know?
There are, and these, I've never seen anyone do it with the precision of Scott and Ryan. They're just, I think a lot of people did it for more of like a flat duo Jets type thing as well. They were taking that kind of aesthetic, and I think that was kind of Jack White's synthesis, as he loved that band. But these guys, you know, you hear them like, oh, there's no way that's two guys. Like, oh my God, that's only two guys.
Right.
So... It's a thing. You got to see it. Everyone's got to get there early and make sure they see them.
Have you seen Royal Blood play?
Oh my God! Yeah, that's, you know what, when I was saying that, it's weird you picked up on it. I was thinking of Royal Blood. I've heard the record is amazing, and my brother has seen them quite a few times and said that they blew his mind. You know, they were just fantastic. So that's another band that's just fantastic. But I don't know. You're gonna have to do a lot to do it better than Local H.
Yeah. Local H has been around. I mean, you guys kind of both broke around the same time, right? Mid-90s.
Yeah, I think about the time that Possum Kingdom came out and Bound for the Floor, and they're just, and Local and both bands have just been. Keep releasing new music and keep touring and keep playing, you know, and it's not one of those nostalgic type things mm-hmm. that we all do. It's like, this is what we do. You know, it's great that we came out in the 90s and people love that, but we're also making brand new relevant music. It's not just trying to redo Rubberneck. They're not trying to redo their older hits or anything, you know.
And when you guys put out a song, I mean, it's the Toadies. There's no question about it, especially, you know, the way it's sung and the way it's played. And there's a lot of songs, too, that start out with just the guitar. And, you know, like we were talking about Polygene a few minutes ago with the bass riff in the beginning. But there's definitely a Toadies stamp on there.
Thank you. Yeah, it's Todd, or Vaden, our singer, he's like the architect of everything. But even when the rest of us come up with riffs and stuff, like Clark... came up with the riff and wrote the song Cannonball that's on the new record. And it's Clark, but it's also off time and very Toadies. Mm. And Aiden was like, that's amazing. And he turned it into, you know, he took that riff and killed it. And actually, there's a song on the record called Amen that we wrote at the Magic Stick in Detroit.
Really?
It started there, yeah. And so, I mean, for years... We still call it the Magic Stick, you know, because that was the name of the riff, because that's where we wrote it and worked on it. So I keep forgetting, like, oh, someone said something about Amen the other day, and I went, huh? And he goes, Magic Stick. Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know, speaking of Detroit here, are you familiar with the band Wilson?
I'm not.
Okay.
No, unfortunately.
The lead singer, they're a band, they put out their debut record on a label or something last year. They toured around the country. They played a bunch of shows and a bunch of, you know, different cruises and different things. But the lead singer, Chad, is like the biggest Toadies fan I've ever met. So I texted him today. I said, hey, I'm talking to Donnie from the Toadies today. Don't be jealous. So he says, tell him I love them.
Are they going to come to the show?
I don't know. I don't know if Chad's going to be around, but I'll definitely pass it along to him that, you know, October 13th in the Motor City. So
awesome. Would love to see them. Yeah, I'm really stoked. I haven't played St. Andrews in a long time. So
yeah, maybe after you got the phone here, you can Google the band Wilson and see, and you can see what Chad's all about. It's a little bit heavier, but yeah, when I first got here to Detroit in 1995, I played Possum Kingdom so many times on the radio. That was one thing I'll never forget about coming to Detroit from Buffalo. You know, and it's like kind of the same type of cities. You know, obviously Detroit's a little bit bigger, but man, I just played that song so many times.
Well, and I say, and it's because I guess like Detroit loves, you know, it loves just kind of meat and potatoes, rock and roll, you know, and music. You guys don't screw around there about your likes. If it's kind of frilly, like, eh.
Right.
You know?
Hey,
and
now
yes, sir. Go ahead.
Oh, and I was going to say, no, did you try? You're right, though. It's like really blue collar, and there's been so many bands that have come out of the city since I've been here, you know?
Oh, yeah, and fantastic ones, and just ones that are associated with it. And everyone that comes out of that, you know, just, you know, they're not messing around, you know? I mean, back to the Stooges, my God.
Right.
How many potatoes can you get in that, you know?
Right. Hey, have the other guys in the band and management and stuff read the book?
Not yet. I think my wife has read it. Our guitar player's wife has read it. I think our drummer might be in the middle of reading it right now. So, but it's one of those things where I don't want to ask them.
Right.
Like, hey, what'd you think? You know.
But it has to be a weird feeling, though, right? To know that, you know, somebody that's so close with you is reading stuff that you wrote and in your story. I mean, it's got to be a strange feeling. I guess it would be different to have somebody listening to your music. Do you know what I'm saying? Do you find it's a little bit of a different thing?
Exactly. No, you're 100% right. I remember when my wife was reading it, I had sweats the whole time.
Were you standing there? Were you staring at her, watching her read it?
I kind of was. You know, it took her, and she read it in a day. And she was like, oh, my God. There was some stuff in there that she didn't even, I mean, she did know, but just different thoughts, you know. And I kind of did it just to shut her up. She kept telling me that I would be a good writer. So I was like, I'll prove it to you that I'm no writer, you know.
Well,
she's right. I'm not saying I'm a writer, but I was able to get it published. You know, I think there's a difference between being an author and a writer. If I get a couple more out there, then I'm a writer.
Right.
You know?
Well, one of the guys here at work wrote a book about his travels and different things. And
wow.
And it was kind of cool. And I read it, and I don't know. It's like kind of a long story, but it's like you finally get to know that person a little bit better and about all his travels and whatnot. And it was so interesting. And then I'm not gonna get into the whole thing, but he kind of wrapped up the book with an anecdote about me, which was really flattering and kind of cool. You know, it's like I didn't realize, you know, not that I made a huge impact, but it just kind of put the story into full circle in a weird kind of way.
Yeah, it's I think that's probably what sets some people off, and if they see, like, wow, I'm in that? Because I've got friends that are in it that have gotten a hold of me and gone, I didn't know you put me in it. I'm like, well, you were part of that story that day. I had to.
Right.
You know, you were integral to that, you know, so it makes them feel like, well, cool, you know?
Yeah, that is cool.
It's one of those, you know, I mean, if they're a part of your story, it's kind of, you want to do that. You need to, you know, and some of the names have changed, and because I didn't want some people to get bummed or anything, you know. And
you got to protect the innocent, right?
Yeah, but I also didn't want to do revisionist history. I didn't want it to make it 100% awesome, you know, and like I'm this awesome, great guy doing all this great stuff. I'm not an either, you know. It was just, I wanted it to be real. Because I wanted people to see who about my age to go, well, this idiot did it. Why can't I do it? You know, one of those things. That was just the whole point. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
No, it's really cool. It's very inspirational because, you know, you get to our age and stuff and people are already set in their ways and you know, kind of have their path already, like, kind of, I don't know, laid out in front of them, so to speak. And you kind of said, no, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it my way. And then to journal it and stuff, that seems pretty wild.
Thank you. Yeah, I've had a few people that have said they read it. And now they're thinking about doing martial arts, or they're thinking about doing running, or they're thinking about doing something. It's kind of like, wow, you know, I wasn't raised that way to just follow the status quo or the norm. My parents were hippies, so they were way out of it. They were like, nah, there's society, and then, nah, we're going to do this, you know, so they raised my brother and I with kind of that attitude of do whatever makes you happy. Don't follow a 9-to-5 thing, which is, there's nothing wrong with that at all either. You know, I do that when I'm home, but just to have your life. You don't, you're not almost dead in your 40s or anything. You don't have to be sedate, you know?
Right. And now, are they still around?
My mom and dad, my dad isn't. He died in 91. My mom is. And in fact, I'd probably better call her today.
You better get her a copy of the book.
She wants one. I'm like, don't read it, Mom. I told my wife's family they wanted one. And I go, I'll give you one. You can't read it, though. Why? I'm not going into it.
Yeah, read it and you'll find out.
Yeah, read it and then you'll like me even less.
Well, listen, Donnie, good luck in the book. We'll see you here in the Motor City at St. Andrews Hall on October 13th. Good luck with the new record as well, Lower Side of Uptown. I can't wait to tell Chad that I talked to you. You're a good guy.
Awesome.
Even if it kills me, martial arts, rock and roll, and mortality. And we'll send everybody to Amazon or wherever they get books to check that out. And continue to inspire.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you. Thank you for your time.
Just in case you were wondering, and who knows if you were, but I recorded that interview last Thursday on September 28th, and of course, the tragic events that took place over the weekend in Las Vegas. So obviously, we didn't get a chance to talk about that. And yeah, it's been a rough couple of days. Like I said, on the radio yesterday, it was tough, of course, with that tragedy in Vegas, and then you got Tom Petty's death, and it's just been a crazy few days, but hopefully things will start to normalize as much as they can, even with gaping holes in our world like that. So thank you guys so much for checking out the Radio Chatter podcast. I do appreciate it. Up next, it's Tyler from Theory of a Dead Man. I should have that up for you here in a day or two. And we talk about a lot of things, including their brand new record that's coming out. They're going to be on tour. His golf game, which I guess is improving by the day. It's funny how all these rock stars turn to golf. I can't tell you how many rock stars go on tour and golf. The guys from Hell Yeah, I think one time they came to a gig of ours, and there was actually a golf simulator at the place. They all went and got their golf bags out of the buses, and they went and hit golf balls in the back. And I know Eric from Shinedown is a huge golf guy. Of course, Alice Cooper. Chris Fain from Slipknot, huge golfing fan. So anyways, we talked to Tyler about a lot of things coming up on the next edition of Radio Chatter. Thank you so much for listening. Of course, share this. Hit me up on my social media at MeltdownWRIF, and we'll do it all again real soon.